Who'd have thought? She's a bass.
I thought you were more of a tenor, because when you sing, I wish you were 10 or 11 miles away.
No, no, that's just what I'm doing my solo. Solo, you can't hear me.
Welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
I was asleep a half hour ago. Why did you wake me up on this ungodly hour?
I didn't wake you up, and it's 11:30.
Oh, God. Oh, I think I could use a nap.
No! You can't nap because KFC has decided to make our lives complete.
Again? That, American, I thought they did that with the Double Down. Get away from me. American foods harden my arteries.
There is a new chicken sandwich coming from the KFC. You know, we started back in prehistory when we started this here podcast. We started in the late 50s, if I remember right.
Yeah, I think it was like 11:50 we started in
the noon hour. We first were horrified by the Double Down, which was the sandwich where it was two pieces of fried chicken.
Every time you say that, my cholesterol goes up a point.
And the interior of the sandwich was a special sauce, cheese, and bacon. Well, now...
Bacon, onion on a sesame seed bun.
This must be healthier because it's a regular chicken sandwich, except the chicken, instead of breading, is Cheetos. Cheetos for breading on your chicken sandwich. Now, you would think that would be enough for a new American food segment, but no, I hold in my hand the list of the new foods available at the Minnesota State Fair, Joe.
Yes, we are nothing if not topical.
Well, especially now that, you know, your schedule has changed. We're recording this the day before it drops.
And the other thing is you probably won't even go to the fair, so I don't know, you know, why you would care. But no, go ahead.
All right, so first.
Hey, did you know the MCBA once had a booth at the fair?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I don't remember how it went because at the time I think I was working. Sears had a booth at the same time, or was I working at the 1919 Ripper booth? I forget, one of the two. But it was really small. It was in the grandstand, which, you know, where the Fall Con is, or Spring Con now. And I don't know what they did. It was really kind of weird because it was like my impression of it was like benches facing each other. And apparently they brought in artists every so often and they're handing out flyers and things like that. I don't know if it had any effect on attendance, but they were there. So yeah,
and they probably told a lot of people go to the 1919 root beer stand.
Yes, because I'm pretty sure we got that because of Nick. So, anyways,
the first one I have here, Joe, is the deep fried dilly dog. No, it is not a deep fried dilly bar from the Dairy Queen. It's
although it could be. They're working on the technology.
A speared pickle stuffed with bratwurst dipped in batter and deep fried.
You had me at stick.
I've told you the joke I pull on people all the time, right, about the State Fair.
No.
The State Fair is where President Theodore Roosevelt gave his famous walk softly and carry a big stick speech. And that's why when you go to the State Fair, all the food is on a stick. In reference to that.
Cool.
And I cannot believe the people who believe the second part of that. The first part is true. you know, the Minnesota State Fair is where he gave that speech. But the food's on a stick, so it can be carried around. Let's see. We've got... here we go. Waffle wraps.
Ugh.
A pair of fruit-made waffle wraps. A fruit-flavored breakfast cereal with warm Reese's peanut butter cups and a waffle au pastor made with Mexican-style marinated pork, pineapple, onion, cilantro, and salsa verde.
I thought there wasn't going to be math in this.
The mini donut latte. A traditional latte with homemade mini donut flavoring. A tipsy pecan tart. This sounds good. This is something I might make. A single serving pecan pie infused with Dublin or Irish whiskey, baked in a buttery and gluten-free shortbread shell.
Yum.
Let's see here. The Carnitas Taco Cone. Carnitas with sesame ginger sauce, cabbage, lime, queso fresca, topped with green onions and sour cream, served in a deep-fried cone-shaped tortilla. So it looks like an ice cream cone. How many of these are you going to spend there, Joe?
You know, what?
Much? Oh, here's another one. A five-layer cold trifle made with vanilla pound cake, lemon curd, made in Minnesota wine, blueberry compote, and a rhubarb compote, topped with mint-infused whipped cream and wine blueberry choline.
Will
probably drink those.
That I would go for. See, a lot of times the problem is when we get to the fair, there's always certain, you know, I do the same thing. I got to get a couple Pronto Puffs. I got to stop by 1919 Root Beer. Sometimes the lines are so incredibly long, it's like I don't want to do it. Like they had this waffle house, and I'll figure out the name of it probably by the end of the podcast. And if you tried to go to it, it was just amazingly busy. They served more there than I think any other booth, because it people flock to it because it's new and it's the new thing on the block. And I tell you, to me, the fair got much, much more interesting, you know, because I can't do the rides, you know, at least the twirly midway ones. You know, I can do the Ye Olde Log Mill, which is like the oldest ride at the state fair, where you just sit in a wooden raft and just kind of float around the inside of a darkened tunnel. It's kind of like the makeout spot of the fair, if you kids know what I mean. Do kids do that anymore? Never mind. And
no, nobody makes out anymore, Joe.
So for me, you know, I get to the what they call Heritage Square. Used to be the beer gardens, because I like history and I like looking at some of the things there. And I pick up, you know, last year or a couple of years ago, it was my dad's root beer. Sometimes it's ciders and things like that, and just get myself a nice buzz. And I'm like, I never realized how boring the fair can be if you're not buzzed. Of course, nobody. Wants to do the spam stuff with me. I'm telling you, weak as water.
How about the Wing Walker donut flight, an assortment of hot deep fried cake donut holes, and three syringes with do-it-yourself fillings?
Now you're talking.
Hey, I'm going to walk around the state fair with a bunch of syringes. Here you go. Bite-sized funnel cake pieces infused with Parmesan Romano and mozzarella, deep-fried and finished with sharp cheddar and chives, served with a homemade Sriracha dipping sauce. And you're diabetic, right?
Well, I am now after you read that.
A swirled blend of cotton candy and blue raspberry soft serve ice cream in a halo of a vanilla cotton candy and sprinkled with a mix of candy toppings. That's something you give your kid, and then when he wakes up from the sugar coma, it's time to go home. And I remember the first time I went to the state fair, the big super new thing was the deep fried candy bars.
Oh, yeah. I actually tried those. I think I probably, if you go into the early history of our podcast, you probably got a review from me, because I was very disappointed. They were kind of, they actually disintegrate inside the breading, so you don't really, it's not like eating a candy bar. I do like the deep fried Twinkies. I will go for those because those actually still have a semblance of a Twinkie to them. So not that that's saying much, but.
And the deep ear is just kind of beer batter they drop in a fryer.
Yeah.
And for me, that's not a big deal because when I was a kid, whenever we would have a catfish, it was a beer batter. Oh, I liked catfish when I was a kid. But that's
I got a taste for that when I was hanging down in New Orleans. It was good.
There is something about catfish.
Meow.
Now, that's what we have for American food. I know that you were talking about you might go to one of the concerts. Weird Al's going to be there.
Peach's
going to be there. I haven't even looked because I just... Every time I go to the state fair, it's hot, it's humid, it's crowded, and it smells terrible.
Well, that's because you're wandering around the dairy barn. You got to get into where the people are.
Yeah, I'm talking about the grandstand.
I mean, it's that way when the con's there too. But you know, it doesn't. That's the one thing about the grandstand is it's the oldest. No, I don't think it's the oldest building. But it's just a big concrete monolith. And when the con's there, you know, obviously not as many people wandering through it. You get there and it's cold and it's clammy. Although this year it was actually pretty decent because the weather outside was decent. I mean, if it's going to be super hot, it takes a couple days for the grandstand interior to catch up. But when you jam it full of vendors and you're talking, well, I mean, people look at the con and they're like, wow, there's a lot of space here. No, they jam it like three times as tough with when the grandstand's going. Because you get all the vendors there. Guys with the Chop-O-Matics. They're selling belt buckles. There's fudge guys. There's the dating quiz show. There's just, I mean, it's a lot of fun to just wander through and see what kind of things there are and what kind of fare there is. But, yeah, after a couple days and a couple thousand people come through, and we're talking, what, about record day at the fair is anywhere from 30 to 40,000 people, maybe more. Yeah, the price does, the temp goes up. Although when it starts raining, and believe me, they've had severe weather during the fair. Boy, people die for that grandstand.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways.
So I have been reading some comic books.
You'd have?
Yeah. And I thought we could talk about them because this here is a comic book podcast.
By God, you're right.
So I got a list of some of the comics I've read and what I thought of them. Do you have a list of some of the comics you read and what you thought of them?
Yeah. Go ahead and start without me.
Oh, I told you a week ago we were doing this.
I know. I'm looking around trying to figure out, okay, where did the book go I was going to review? It was right here. Oh, well, go ahead and start. I'll try to find it.
All right, the first book that I read, the Ghostbusters 35th Anniversary Extreme. And it's a 35th Anniversary special one-shot written by Jim Beard and Keith Dallas and drawn by Tim Latty. And I don't read the regular Ghostbuster comic. This is so-called Extreme Ghostbusters, so it's not all of the characters, but it does. One thing that I liked is at the beginning they had a list of who the main characters are. It's Egon, Spencer, Janine, and then four new characters. And I don't know, was Extreme Ghostbusters a cartoon or something?
It may have been. I don't recall. I remember the real Ghostbusters, and then there was the... was it a Filmation did a Ghostbusters?
Well, what it was, Filmation did a Ghostbusters in the 70s.
Yeah.
And
it came back when
the movie came out. And to sort of keep from being sued, Columbia said, oh, you can do a Ghostbusters cartoon. We'll call ours this. You call yours that.
Yeah.
And there was also a movie in the 50s called Spookbusters with the Bowery Boys.
Yeah, I think the one you're thinking of was a little later, like when they started to reboot everything for whatever reason. So, yeah, it was. And it was kind of neat. Is that the cover that has it, everybody in quarters and they show everybody?
No. That's a special coming out. It has basically it has the characters being attacked by a bunch of Slimers.
Why not?
And
he slimed me.
This was a nice little one shot. It was a simple story. It introduced the characters. It was a good introduction. There wasn't a lot of substance here. It felt very much like a cartoon tie-in book. I was feeling the need to get some Ghostbusters, so I thought I would try this one. For a one-shot, it was very well done in that. Set up the situation, introduced us to the characters, made us care about the characters, and had a decent twist at the end. Was it worth the $4.99? No, of course not. Nothing could be. No. No. 24 pages was not worth the $3.99 or $4.99, whichever it was. But it was basically, it felt like I was watching an episode of a Ghostbusters cartoon as I read this book. If you are a huge Ghostbusters fan, this is probably a buy. For me, it was a borrow. It was a decent little one-shot. The art was very animation-based. Again, the story was well put together. It just was, felt like an average episode of a TV show. So for me, it was a borrow. Joe, what's next? What's on your list?
I told you already.
No, you didn't.
I'm pretty sure. Go on to the next one.
You didn't prepare for this, did you?
I told you already.
No, you didn't. We're not doing the Monty Python argument sketch.
But you didn't pay for an argument, so you're not getting one.
Okay, the next book I read was the first issue of Star Trek Year 5. This is going to be says it's an ongoing series that will tell the story of what happened Star Trek Year 5. We've had a few different Star Trek Year 4s, which goes back to the original cast and tells what happens during the fourth season that never aired. There have been books. I think there was even a comic series. This was kind of a big deal because the cover was by Greg Hildebrandt. And I guess he had never done any Star Trek stuff before. The writers are Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly. Artist was Stephen Thompson. And it starts out at the end of the fifth season. We show that the Enterprise is deserted except for Captain Kirk. It's been invaded and is about to be destroyed. So that's the first page. And then we jump back to the beginning of the fifth year. I liked this story. It was well done. It used all the characters well. The only thing that kind of bugged me about it was by the third season, the interplay between Spock and McCoy wasn't as bristly as it was in the first season. This goes back to their interplay being very not friendly, for lack of a better term. But there were a lot of little bits in here I liked, such as somebody, Spock and Scotty are running down a corridor, and Scotty's like, "Oh, I can't run as much as I used to." And Spock says, "Well, you have been putting on weight," which, if you've seen the Star Trek movies, yeah, he put on weight. Just
see what happens when you take a starving actor and you feed him.
There were a lot of things about this I liked. It felt like a really good Star Trek episode. Again, they're going back to it. This was a TV episode in comic book form. It was done in one, except for that lead that is kind of be, okay, here's what we're building toward. The story itself didn't really give much of a clue as to how they got there. But overall, I liked it. The art was good. I always judge Star Trek books by Gordon Purcell's art, because I think Gordon Purcell was one of the best people to work on a Star Trek book, because he was really excellent at nailing the likenesses without it looking like he'd just looked at a photo and went, oh, I'll draw it like that. He was able to draw the characters looking like the characters without it being stiff and overly photo-referenced. This art was close to that. The coloring's amazing, though. It's really bright and pops off the page. And the reason I mention the coloring is, on the original Star Trek, Joe, why was everything colored so loud? Why were the colors so bright and loud?
Because it was recorded in living color. Because I think RCA was pushing color televisions at the time.
Yes. And this and the Batman show were one of the, they said, we want flashy, bright color so that people know that this is color TV.
Batman! And of course in the bottom, in color. They didn't say in color, but...
But it's why they used very bright primary colors in early color TV series to show, not just to show off what the color TV could do, but also because subtle colors weren't really the easiest thing to pull off on those early color TVs. The other thing that I liked is we're starting with Kirk being told that he's being up for admiral. And he is ambivalent about it, which of course plays into the character in the movies in the future and the way they, you know, they always played with that, that, you know, in Star Trek, the motion picture, and in Star Trek II, he was an admiral, but he missed being a ship captain. So this sort of sets the tone for that, lets you know that that's part of the character, and I like that. Joe?
My second book to review is from Vault Comics, and it's called Queen of Bad Dreams. I'm not sure if it's a miniseries or an ongoing. Creator, Danny Lohr, artist, Jordi Perez. The gist of the comic, when a dream entity known as a figment emerges from a dreamer's mind, it's Daher's job as an IJ to track them down and make the call, reinstate the figment, or grant them agency into our world. But after an especially powerful figment escapes the dreams of an even more powerful politician's son, she's pulled headlong into an investigation that traces all the way back to the incident that sent the dreams, even nightmares, spilling into our reality. I don't know how to describe it any bit better than that. I mean, it's kind of like first time you watch X-Files and you're not quite sure what's going on. The art is really well done. It does the number one thing that I like, in the fact that you can figure out who is who just by looking at the pages. It gets a little confusing once you run into the figment, because just like when we met Frasier on Cheers, he's sitting in the audience. You don't realize it until the big reveal, and it kind of happens that way too. And of course, the main character, you're learning not only about what she does, her personality, and then of course there's obviously, you heard me talk about a politician's son, where there's politics going on board. People want to know, why is this figment so important? Why is she being pressured to just reinsert it? Because usually her call is, well, I got to figure out what's going on. And two issues have come out. I read both in a row, and I'm intrigued. I want to know what's going on. I want to know why all these powerful people have the they just want to destroy this figment, and what is it about it? I still don't understand a lot of what's going on in the universe, but it seems to be pretty consistent. And of course, she's kind of how would you say? I guess I'd say anti-hero, because obviously she's got a job to do. She's not going to, you know, she's, why am I being pressured into shortcutting my job? That's not what I do. And So you get part fantasy, it's set in the future, you get a little cop drama, you get some political intrigue in the background. So very good setup. Vault is a newer company, I believe. It just kind of popped up on the pages, and they do very good ads. If you check them out, they have tons of other comics. They do a very, very funny ad for in the second issue for Wasted Space, where the it's not just a preview, but it's actual original material talking about the comic. And I keep thinking, if people would do that more in previews to kind of give you, well, here's what's going on, here's what the artwork's like, here's my style of writing, you know, and it's a character talking to you. I just thought that was brilliant. I'm looking at my issue one to see if they did they give me a preview there, but I kind of previewed some things. So if you're interested, you can go to vaultcomics.com and see what they've got. Otherwise, check the back of the preview. So far, this is the only book from them I'm buying, and I will keep my eyes open, just like some of the other small press. I know we're going to talk about it sometime in the future about the disappearance of Vertigo. You know, you're not going to be able to find books like this. Maybe at once upon a time you might have found them at the big two, but you're going to have to do a little bit more hunting now if you're so disposed like me to look for stuff beyond the superhero guys. So anyways, that's my second one. Corey, what do you got?
Next, I would – oh, by the way, the Star Trek on the buy, borrow, ignore. I'm putting it as a buy, but I would recommend waiting for the trade paperback.
And obviously, my Queen of Bad Dreams I bought, so I recommend it as a buy. And I would assume it's going to come out as a graphic novel, because much as I like reading this month to month, I can't help but think if I sat down with a graphic novel, you know, once the whole story is told, it might be a little more satisfying. But either way, we're good either way.
The next book I have is Silver Surfer Black, which is a new miniseries written by Donnie Cates and drawn by Trad Moore. Trad Moore is an artist I've never seen before. And one of the things, when you open up the book, this is not drawn. When I think Silver Surfer, of course, I think Kirby, and I think Romita. I'm not Romita. John Buscema and Ron Lim. People who draw in a very realistic style, except for Kirby, who was more impressionistic. But pretty much after Kirby, it's that Buscema realistic style where, you know, you could tell that whoever's drawing it has devoured and made into their body an anatomy handbook. Trad Moore's stuff feels more like Ditko, with a kind of a layer of surrealism in a lot of ways. This does not look like any Silver Surfer book I've ever seen. The story picks up from the end of the last big crossover, Infinity Wars, whatever it was, where the Black Order open a black hole and cast several heroes, including Silver Surfer, into the abyss. This starts up with them in the abyss. The Surfer uses his power to free everyone but himself, and he is trapped in this abyss. And in this abyss, he finds a planet, and this planet is rather odd. It does not follow the rules of physics and the power cosmic in our universe. A really good first issue. One of the problems I have with a lot of comics is you read a first issue and there's all set up and you can read it in, you know, 5-10 minutes. This book had some meat on its bones. And I'm not saying that it was overwritten. It was just, there was a lot of story packed into this. There was a lot of action packed into this. And I think the thing I liked about it most is we took the Silver Surfer and put him in a place where he doesn't know what's going on and they don't know him. So you're able to explore the Surfer's character in a way that people haven't done in a while. It also, anytime people start throwing new characters into the Marvel Universe, my ears poke up a little bit, because I think it's really interesting when someone says, okay, let's explore this new area. It was kind of like when Annihilation started. And it was, oh, we're going to do Marvel Cosmic in a new way that's not just, ah, what did Jim Starlin do? Let's do that. This felt new as well. It didn't feel like, oh, here's what Starlin did. It felt a lot like those Ditko issues of The Silver Surfer, where he was playing in different universes and made them look very different. I was very excited about this book. It was probably the most I've been excited about The Silver Surfer in a while. And by the end of it, I really wanted more. On the buy, borrow, and ignore, this is a buy, and I cannot wait for the next issue. The only disappointment I have is it's only a 5-part miniseries, and I would like a Silver Surfer series by these creators. So, Joe?
All right. The next one I reviewed was the all 5 issues of The Black Order. And this came out in between the Guardians, the current Guardians of the Galaxy series and the last Avengers weekly series. What was it called, the one where Conan came?
Oh, I don't remember the name of it, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. It's in the box of stuff. So this is the type of miniseries I've talked about in the past, where it spins out of one and goes into another. If you're interested, you can pick it up. If you're not, you don't have to pick it up. They may have had some interest in it because the characters appeared in the Avengers movie, but I don't know. So, let's see. Writer, Derek Landley. Penciler, Philip Tan. A whole bunch of inkers. I enjoyed this one. This is kind of almost a primer to these characters. They also took Black Swan from Jonathan Hickman's run of Avengers into Secret War. Wars? War? What? Whatever. And they kind of fleshed them out a little bit. They're tasked with the Grandmaster to do something. There's a lot of introspection on the characters. Again, they're the bad guys. But I found it interesting because when the bad guys are doing something and they get screwed by even worse guys, you start cheering for the bad guys. And then, of course, when they show up in when they showed up in Avengers, I was way against them. And of course, when they show up again in Guardians, you're like, I don't think I like these guys as much. Well drawn, a good story. I found it compelling. And the fact that it was a miniseries was even more fun. And whether you like them or hate them, I picked them up just to see what was going on. I think where it goes, they're adventures. Yeah, continue in order of Guardians of the Galaxy. This is the type of miniseries that I talk about. It's spun out of current events. We know the characters. If you're vaguely at all interested, and I was, you can pick it up. If not, sadly, you can ignore it. You know, this is one of those, like what Corey says on the buy, borrow, or ignore. It depends on your level of interest. If you just want, if you were intrigued by the characters, definitely buy it. I'm pretty sure the graphic novel's out now, or I can imagine some of the bigger comic shops might actually still have it in the shelves or in the back issues, because it certainly wasn't lighting up it might have been off a lot of people's radar. This is one of those things, because Marvel pumps out so many things, people might have just ignored. But I bought it, I enjoyed it, and I personally give it a buy, with the caveat, if you're all interested in the characters, again, I don't know if Marvel's going to do another cosmic-y thing with all the characters. I'd like to think they are. But it's just like what Corey said with the Silver Surfer one. You know, it's just one of those series that people are like, maybe I'll ignore. Especially now, because this came out before the War of the Realms. Right now, if you were trying to buy War of the Realms, and I'm enjoying it, I don't see how you'd have time to buy anything else. So, kind of a faint praise for me. But yeah, I enjoyed it. So if it all tickles your fancy, definitely check it out. Mr. Strode.
The next book I have is one of DC's big books, Deceased.
Oh, I've heard about this, but I didn't pick it up, and I think I might be too late.
No, it's never too late. It'll be on the trust me, this will be collected. This is, I read the first two issues. It's written by Tom Taylor, drawn by Trevor Hairsine. First off, the art feels like Neil Adams inked with a brush, where it has the Neil Adams dynamic layout and realism, but it's not scratchy ink lines. It's very smooth ink lines, almost like they're doing outlines of the art in some pages. So I really liked that approach. I think there are times where the coloring is a little off, where the coloring is almost off-putting, where they're playing with the, almost like they're playing with the computer effects a little too much. I know when they first got computer coloring, people went really nuts for it, and now it's toned down. Now that, you know, it's everybody uses computers to color, but I won't get into a long criticism of it, but when you do your light sources and you do them with your ink line, you don't need to overdo it with the coloring too. I think that kind of it hurts the art rather than helps it. Joe, did you read Marvel Zombies back in the day?
Did not. I think I might have picked up one or two and read it and just like, it's funny, not for me.
Then this is Marvel Zombies without the humor.
Well, that was the only thing that kept me interested in Marvel Zombies, was that it was funny.
First off, DC, when I pick up the book, I didn't know if this was in the regular DC universe or not. Nowhere in it does it say anything about, you know, this is an alternate universe, this is an Elseworlds story. And the stuff they're doing in it, I finally said, okay, this is either a really huge deal in the DC universe. Oh, wait, no, not with that character they killed and that character they killed. Okay, this is non-continuity.
Ah.
You like need Injustice. To say that in the book.
Yeah. Maybe that was part of the thing. They're trying to get everybody going. I have heard internet buzz. That's the word I was trying to get on the Black Order. I have been hearing internet buzz on this one. And again, when I read the previews, it was just kind of went over it. I don't even, did we even, was it even a mention when we?
No.
Yeah.
No. But I did pick it up to give it a try. For the story they're telling, it's very well done. But it feels a decade late. Because Marvel didn't just do Marvel Zombies. Marvel jammed Marvel Zombies into the ground to the point where no one cared anymore. And this is almost kind of...
Wait a minute. I gotta set my recorder to get the latest episode of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Okay.
Trying to make kind of allegory, or, you know, same thing. That ABC jammed that down and just killed it until nobody cares.
By the way, did you know that the syndicated version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire ends in September? You probably didn't even know they were still making it.
I got to admit, when I was flipping through channels during my hip recovery, I was shocked to see it.
Yeah.
Didn't watch it, but I was like, oh, it's still on.
But again, this feels a decade too late. It's good for what it is. It's well done for what it is, but it's not shocking anymore. It's unless they figure out something new to do with this type of story. I'm about to go off on a tangent, Joe.
Right, tangent. Hang on. Let me sit down. I just got to get my beer open. Let me just... Yeah, pour that baby. I'll even, with Corey ranting, I'll even accept a little head on my beer. All right, go ahead.
Okay, the thing about genre is, when a genre first starts, we'll take zombies. When the zombie genre first started, you had George Romero do kind of the prototypical zombie story. Night of the Living Dead. And then for years afterward, people kind of remade that in different ways. Then Romero did Dawn of the Dead. Now, in Night of the Living Dead, the social allegory was kind of, it wasn't hammered in your face. Dawn of the Dead, the social allegory was much more in your face. And Day of the Dead, it was really in your face. So he sort of used the zombie genre to tell stories about society. Now, Return of the Living Dead did it for humor. The Zack Snyder Dawn of the Dead did it for action adventure. Walking Dead uses it for characterization. Genre can be used. It's kind of like a clothesline that you hang things on. Another genre that I'm really fond of is the spaghetti western. Everybody's seen The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. At least if you haven't, go watch it. It was a different way of telling a western because the western here in the U.S. had become so homogenized. It was basically your generic action adventure. And the spaghetti western, they could do political, where they would talk about the Mexican Revolution of the 1800s. They could do religious. They could do allegorical. They could do humor. They could do film commentary. All of this hanging on that same thread. With Deceased, it's like, okay, we've moved along in this genre quite a ways. We're going to go back and tell a story at the beginning of the genre, which is, isn't it shocking that the dead are killing people and eating them? You can't do that when the genre has been around this long. You have to kind of add something to it. You got to bring something new to the table. It's kind of like how back in the 60s, you would get kind of, well, in the 70s too, for superhero books, you kind of get that fill-in, which is just, look, it's Spider-Man fighting Electro. Well, what's the plot? Spider-Man fighting Electro. Well, you can't do that now. You have to add more to it. You have to, you know, you have to play more in the genre. You have to bring something new to the table, or you're just retelling the same story over and over. And in this case, the art is okay, the story is professionally done, but it's retelling the same story. So in that way, it's a borrow, not because it's bad, but because it's just nothing new there. This is a story we've heard before. It's just now, instead of, you know, these characters, it's the DC characters. Joe?
All right. The next one I got is from Boom Studios. Faithless. Help me with the name here. Brian Azzarello?
Azzarello.
Azzarello. Thank you. And Maria Lovett. And there's no other way to explain it, but it's an erotic depiction of faith, sex, and the devil in the tradition of the Divine Comedy. Two issues so far. And I am greatly, greatly enjoying this. Again, I cannot eloquate how much the art works in this case because, you know the characters are, you know their emotions. The erotic scenes are fairly erotic. I mean, you read them and you're like, ooh, there is definitely something there. And we don't quite know what's going on, although we're following the main protagonist along as she's just been kind of thrust into this world, and just when you think you know what's going on, you really don't. And for two issues so far, this is one of those books where I don't want to say too much because I don't want to give it away. Again, if it's a book that's been out for a while, I'll spoil the living bejesus out of it. But in this case, it's still coming. I have no idea where Brian and Maria are going with this. It does come with what they call the erotic cover variant, where it is bagged, so not to offend delicate people. You can, internet it, find it if you don't want to buy it. But I just bought the regular copy. I think I did buy number one of the variant, ended up selling it. So because I just got the regular one. This will really, really work well as a graphic novel, but as an individual series, it's just fun to read and just see what's going on. One could see, and that's the thing. A lot of times when I read this stuff, I think, how would this work as a Netflix series? And it would work very well. I don't know if that's their goal. Ultimately, is like here, and I don't know why I think that. You know, you think I'd just be happy with the comic medium the way it is. But sometimes you like to see things come to life in a different media. You know, the way you visualize it, the way it is. I give Faithless a buy. Again, if you can find the two issues, jump on board and enjoy the ride. If not, I would be very, very surprised if they did not do a graphic novel on this one. I believe it's five issues. I don't have my comic list here, so I can't take it up. But it is a mini series, which is one of the reasons I did pick up on it. So come get some.
The last one I'm going to review is Jughead the Hunger versus Vampironica, number one from Archie Comics. This is by Frank Thierry. The art is by Pat and Tim Kennedy for first 15 pages, and Joe Eisma for the last five. So somebody didn't hit the deadline. Story is, this picks up after Vampironica. So they begin by celebrating that they have gotten rid of all the vampires. Well, this story tells us that everything that happened at the end of the Vampironica series to show they'd gotten rid of all the vampires was a trick. And not a very good one, and not a very well-written one. And here's my problem with this book and why I won't be picking up anymore. This entire book was exposition. This was
in comics, you need to show it, not talk it.
Well, you do show it, but it's all okay. You know how on the first page we were celebrating the vampires are gone? Oh, look, here's a big sequence showing that the vampires aren't really gone. Here's another sequence undoing the end of this series. And by the end of it, this entire issue was undoing another comic. We don't even get Jughead as a werewolf. It was just undoing another comic. And it's one of the things that I hated about Marvel in the 90s. When it's, okay, you know that story that we told, you know, a year ago or 2 years ago or 10 years ago? It was all lies. That's what this felt like. And the worst thing about it is they're undoing a story that they just did a couple of months ago. These books come out so infrequently, you can't keep jamming the continuity. And they haven't been around long enough that you already are doing continuity implants and retcons. And that's the worst thing about 90s comics, with all the retcons. And this issue just felt like a retcon. We don't get what it says. It's Jughead the Hunger versus Vampironica. Well, Jughead isn't a werewolf in any part of the issue, and the entire thing is everything you knew was wrong. Well, then why bother? I'm not even going to finish reading it, because who knows, maybe the next miniseries will undo this one. And whenever you're doing a retcon, especially if something's so recent, you're basically telling me I wasted my time reading the previous story because it doesn't matter. We've undone it all. So, the art is nice. They use a very simplified color palette. They go with they don't go with realistic colors. They go with very moody colors, almost like a German impressionistic sort of style. If you watched any of the Italian Giallo movies of the 70s, they're using that style of, you know, blue, red, and just saturating the panel with those colors. And it's very striking, and the art is good. But by the end of the story, I just felt like I'd wasted my time reading somebody's online letter about why they hated a story and why it didn't work. So there you go. There's my first ignore. Joe?
The first book I'm going to start with is one I enjoyed the living bejesus out of. Paradox Girl, first cycle from Image. Again, I'm going to slaughter the name in my known inimitable style. Katie Borquin and Yishan Lee. With no regrets, no impulse control, no past that can't be rewritten, and the ability to travel through time at will. And that's where you got me, because you know I love me my time travel. Paradox Girl keeps leaping from panel to panel, page to page, chasing bizarre whims, bickering with herself, and maybe even saving the day once in a while. But when every detail in your life can be changed, how do you know who you really are? Sounds a little angsty? Well, absolutely not. She enjoys the living bejesus out of being Paradox Girl. Doesn't care where she's been. Matter of fact, the first issue pretty much she just, you know, wakes up and she ends up getting a fight with herself over the last waffle. Again, ego, you know, for those of you that can't violate trademark norms. And the first issue, we follow her linearly, but, you know, you're wondering what's going on because there are like 5-6 of her sitting around her. And it's kind of fun because I'm just going to give away one, like where she's arguing with who forgot to place the waffles. And the two of them look at each other. The one waffle pops up and they start fighting, and they're actually blinking themselves through time fighting over this waffle. And one of the panels is they're standing, they appear briefly above this large Godzilla type monster. Well, as you go forward in the book, eventually, again, she's one of the two that are fighting each other. Then she becomes the other one fighting, and they appear again above the large Godzilla monster. And then when they finally get to the point in the line, in the timeline where she's, well, okay, the reason why she fights the Godzilla monster, because when she finally appears after winning the waffle from herself, this giant Godzilla monster stomps on it. And now she's mad. So then she attacks the monster. While she's attacking the monster, you see the two of her in the past where they're fighting over the waffle. It's just brilliantly done. I mean, I sat there and it's easy to follow what's going on. They do clever tricks where, like, just follow the pink line and you'll know which panels to read next as she goes back through time and researches how to defeat the giant Godzilla monster, thereby saving the day. And then, of course, she goes back in time and takes the one of the two waffles. Because what we didn't realize is when we see the toaster pop up, two pop up, and then suddenly there's one there and the two of her start fighting and going through time fighting it. Well, that's because she came back and took the other one. So she got her waffle, and that's why when she starts up and she's eating it in front of herself that just woke up. Are you getting this? Well, you should, because it's just, I've never had so much fun reading a time travel comic in my life. It just was an utter, utter blast. And the other ones, you think, okay, how are you going to top that? Okay, you do. And each one that comes through, one is more amazing than the rest. You know, you obviously, when you start the panel and there's, let's say, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of her playing. Well, I guess they're arguing over a waffle box again. And she stops to talk to an old man that's kind of just, he's on the bench sad. And as he talks to her, he starts explaining what's wrong. And he basically just lost his wife, and he's just talking about his life. And as he talks about it, you see her in the background, you know, and then you come to the future. Now there's two Paradox girls listening to him. And then he talks about another, well, then I met her for the first time. Boom. And it goes on and on and on, and just amazing stories. I think there was only 5 issues of this that came out. And really, I got kind of, when I got to the end, I was like, oh, come on, there's still more. And fortunately, they give you a little bit more. They put a couple short strips that I don't know if they appeared in other magazines like Image Zero or whatever. Just a lot of fun. It came out. I bought it as a graphic novel. I didn't buy the series. I can't recommend this one enough, especially if you're big like me on time travel. You just want a fresh take on it. And more importantly, she's not real angsty about the fact that she changes time and goes back in time all the, you know. And she is a hero. She's helping fight with another superhero who pops up here and there. And again, there's a lot of questions. We may never get why she's this way. I don't think it really matters. I don't understand who the hero is she helps, you know, because when she's fighting that Godzilla type thing, he was there helping her, actually probably chastising her. That's what got her into fighting it. No, actually stomping on the waffle did. But just a wonderful, fun series. And again, I reread it countless times because you just want to follow just what's going on. I haven't had this much fun reading a book since, I think, Walt Simonson did that in a Fantastic Four issue where Mr. Fantastic is bopping through the issue, and you can either read it linearly and figure what the rest of the guys are, or read it with how Mr. Fantastic is reacting to everything. Silver Surfer did one in the Mike Allred run. Dan Slott, right? They did an issue like that where, you know, you just follow the timeline because the way you're reading it isn't necessarily the way Silver Surfer experienced it. So to pull that off is a kudos. And I'm that's why I'm proud to have this be the first one I review. Corey, what you got for the second one? Or your first one, I'm sorry.
You know who doesn't have trouble with time travel?
Hey, are we ever going to get sponsors on this show?
These guys, our sponsors! That's right, here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network, we have ads, and our first sponsor is me. That's right, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. I have my first book out with Dangerous Dan Moore. It's the first 100 strips of our online web strip, Worldwide News, the story of the lowest-rated cable news network. And you can get yourself a copy with commentary, with all sorts of extras, with signatures and everything. Just email Dan over at lordshadowflame@gmail.com. Our top sponsor, who's been with us since day one, is DreamHost. DreamHost.com. You need yourself a website, and DreamHost.com is the number one web host in the whole known universe. Just head over to DreamHost.com, put in the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, get $20 off your first year. How can you beat that? Our other sponsor is Graze, G-R-A-Z-E.com. Healthy snacks for a healthy lifestyle. Just head over to Graze, put in the code CORYS3R5P. Your first and fifth box are free. You can get them weekly. You can get them bi-weekly. You can get them monthly. You can just order a whole bunch of them. It's great stuff to keep you away from the vending machine at work. Now, if you would like to leave a comment for any of the podcasts that we do, we'd love those. Go ahead and email us at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, or you can call 952-856-0519. Operators are standing by. Okay, it's just a place that will record your calls, but we'll play them on the air. We'll answer your questions. We love getting feedback. Tell us what you think. Ask a question. Suggest a topic. Be a guest. Send us your stuff. solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. If you would like to advertise on any of the Solitaire Rose radio shows, you can. Just email us at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising. Thanks. And now that we've done with the sponsors, we've plugged for them. Now it's time to plug for us. And for me, it's all these other podcasts I do. The Solitaire Rose Radio Network has all sorts of podcasts for you. There's, of course, Crazy Comics and Stories, where myself and Crazy Joe Ryder get together once a week to talk comics. We review comics, we talk about upcoming comics, we talk about comics history. Anything that has to do with comics, we're going to talk about. We also have Series in Review, where we review series and kind of give a DVD commentary of past comics that we've enjoyed. There is also Solitaire Rose Radio. Solitaire Rose Radio is my solo show where I discuss upcoming comics, past comics, comics history, and interview comics creators. These are all at crazycomics.solitairerose.com. There's also the podcast I'm proudest of. That's Novelcast, where I take the novels that I have written and turn them into audiobooks. That's at novels.solitairerose.com. Over at Bad Advice, myself, Dan Moore, and Wolfie B. Bad take your questions and give you bad advice. It's at badadvice.solitairerose.com. Now, don't think that I'm doing all the podcasts, because there's also Scrabbling Across the West by Dave Coffell and Stephanie Coffell. Dave is a musician and Stephanie is his wife. They travel the country performing music and playing Scrabble over at scrabbling.solitairerose.com. And finally, the newest member of the Solitaire Rose Radio group, that's Fantastic Forecast, where myself and host of For the Love of Comics, Adam Vermillion, go over the series The Fantastic Four, four issues at a time. That's available at fantasticforecast.solitairerose.com. If you would like to advertise on any of these podcasts, you can. Just email me at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks. And now we get to Joe's favorite part of the show. No, not where we time travel to the state fair so he can eat that cotton candy ice cream thing. It's what's going on the eBays?
I'm surprised you brought that up. I'm real excited about this new selling format called eBay. It really is catching the world by storm. There's nothing like it. A lot of guys doing auctions and things like that. I'm just going to put up, I guess they buy it now, because I think that's going to be kind of the wave of the future. I could see some big computer type company overtaking eBay, just selling things as, instead of auctioning it, because, you hate to get sniped, especially by like 50 cents or something like that. So I've set up what they call an eBay store, kind of like an online thing, and the handle's Crazy, KRAYZ. Not quite sure where I got that from, but you can go on and I've brought a bunch of stuff from the past forward. I sold a couple copies of, if you remember, 1973 Warlock. This is before Jim Starlin got a hold of it, and he was kind of on Counter Earth, being a what would you call it? Like I guess he was the savior or something. I never even read these. I found the art hard to read and just did not enjoy it at all. Just kind of real angsty. But once Starling got on board. But anyways, I had a couple in good shape, ended up selling it. A couple other fun things. Some I Hate Fairyland variants from Scotty Young. Some are the regular cover. Most are the FU variant. So I know we're explicit. I can say it if I want, but I'm not going to. So some miniseries, World War Hulk After Smash. I don't know if that's in my World War Hulk omnibus. I don't see it nearby, so I'm not going to go digging for it. But, I really loved World War Hulk, and I picked up all the miniseries. But, I'm kind of restraining myself now because I just don't got the money to do it all. I did sell a couple War of the Realms variants, the Virgin Art cover, a couple by Joe Quesada. Found a couple odd things. I had a Paul Bunyan Giant Lumberjack book from 1968. No idea what to do with it. The previous one I'd seen online, published by the same company, but that was way back in the 50s. So I just put it up for $10, sold for $10. And then you're like, did I undersell that? Corey, I sold a Detective Comics number one.
Whoa! The new 52 version, right?
No, the Millennium Edition.
Oh,
I picked this up and read through it. Oh, you talk about racist comics. You got to love the cover, too.
It's Fu Manchu on the cover.
Oh, just a lot of... I mean, it's amazing to just look back in time and just read a lot of short stories way before Batman. This was 1937. More current, I sold a run of Rogue Comics, Volume 4 from 2004, 1 through 12. Actually going to a member of the armed services. So that's something, when you sell things with an APO address, you have to fill out a customs form. And then the problem is once they ship it, you're not allowed to really track it other than the fact it arrived at wherever military mail is. And after that, just keep my fingers crossed and hope he does get it. A couple odd things that have been sitting around. I had something called Alibi from Top Cow, 2008. Season 1, not a clue what it's about, but I had the only one on the eBays. Well, had it. It's sold now. Disney Star versus the Forces of Evil. Another, my guess is this is probably on whatever Disney calls their cable channel, because I had no idea who it was, but none on eBays. None now, because I sold it. And then, of course, I would be derelict in my duty if I did not sell a Spider-Gwen comic, because I know Corey loves Spider-Gwen. This was the number 2 Midtown Comics variant. And trying to see who did the art. Oh, Mike Deodato. So, he knows how to draw some decent comics. Lots of stuff up. I will point out, if you're a Transformer fan, and I know Corey's a raving Transformer maniac, a bud of mine who donated tons of stuff to the art auction way back at the SpringCon. Well, he had some of the actual, they call them commemorative series of Transformers. And the few he had, I've actually put on eBays, and I do what I always do. They're the lowest one there. First one sold was the Autobot Sideswipe. And these are remakes of the original ones. So they're very, very clever cars if you want to take them out. I mean, that whole line was just brilliantly done. because it was a car, and then you watch how it transforms into an actual fairly decent looking robot. And boy, I wish I had some of those original ones. That's how you know there's no time travel, because I'd have gone back in time and say, you know, Transformers, when they first came out, were hot. It was like one of the big toys, because I was doing Sears catalog at the time. And I told the story about how one mom brought up, and I believe it was a Megatron, the pistol. And she said, I'm not sure if this works. I can't get it to work. And I just called the kid over. Hey, kid, transfer this for me. Robot. Okay, thank you. Put it back. I said, see, that's fine. The kids are the ones who do that. And, of course, I did try to get an Optimus Prime. I did try to get all these, but they were sold out, because they just sold out everywhere. Ah, Corey, I tell you, you see the meme online that says, if you could give yourself three words in the past, what would you send? Mine would be, don't sell anything. But I didn't listen to myself, and I am. So go on this eBay's. I've been selling for the last, since 1998. And check the handle Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z. If you see something and you buy it from me, let me know. Because one of my friends, John, from used to shop at my store. He's volunteer at the con. He actually bought another thing from me. He was nice enough to send a note and say, hey, if you want to skip shipping. But you know what? Forget it. I will swallow the shipping costs. And I ended up sending him a Star Wars Darth Vader #1, where they did the Anakin Skywalker action figure, which was actually kind of fun. So come get some.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show. No, not where I go on and on about how I can't wait to try the fried taco on a stick.
On a stick.
It's Freaking and Geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
Oh, just the same old BS on the internet. So, I mean, you got Legion of Superhero fan clubs going in an utter uproar over the fact that Bendis is writing Legion of Superheroes. Oh my God, you'd have thought the second coming had arrived and we didn't get a Legion of Superheroes book. You know, after watching Avengers, I'm kind of looking forward to it. I mean, I'll try anything Bendis does. You know, I got to admit, I'm a little underwhelmed with the Superman. This Leviathan crossover going on right now will probably be the final thing. If I like it, great. If not, you know, I'll just stop buying it. Another one that's kind of interesting is people are complaining bitterly because J.J. Abrams' son Henry is going to be writing Marvel's flagship character, Spider-Man. I thought it was interesting. I'm going to quote somebody who probably has no idea what that feels like, Peter David. He says, this is a very familiar argument to me. I heard it 35 years ago when editor Jim Owsley handed an unknown guy in the sales department some fill-in issues of Amazing Spider-Man and then an ongoing series, Peter Parker, The Spectacular Spider-Man, during which time he wrote stories like The Commuter Cometh and The Death of Jean DeWolf. Indeed, there are some who refuse to believe the sales guy was producing stories the fans loved and James wasn't seriously rewriting them. Boy, what's old is new again. Again, don't care. I like the current run that's going on in Spider-Man, but you know, again, somebody wrote, I don't know, was it just some feedback we got recently, Corey, but somebody made the comment how he enjoys the fact that we don't bash a lot of comics. We don't sit in, you know, some podcasts, all they do is they just exist to see how snarky or clever they can be by bashing comics. We don't do that. I mean, we're mainly because a lot of times we're spending our own hard-earned, whatever, on what we're talking about. And if we're not talking about it, that means we're probably not buying it. And if it happens to be a book you enjoy and we're not talking about it, hey, you can send us a quick note, give us a quick review. We more than love to read quick reviews that our readers are doing. Or worse, it's just even better. If you're a creator and we're ignoring your stuff, send us a copy, send us a review. Say, hey, would you look at this please? Because, I was talking about Brewhead in the last episode. You know, that gentleman actually sent me a copy of it, and then I ended up selling oodles of his comic, and he appreciated it. I loved running into him at the show, and again, I have no idea if he's doing anything now, but you know, there's more than one way to enjoy a comic. So if if we're not covering it, you know what to do about it. See, look at that. I'm just that type of guy. I turned a freaking into a positive. Let's see what Corey can do. Corey, what are you freaking on?
Well, to piggyback on what you said, even when we give a comic a bad review, we don't go on and on about how, oh, this sucks, it's terrible. We explain why it doesn't work.
Well, and we're, you know, it's kind of Jim Shooter, was it Jim Shooter or somebody else said, you know, everybody's comic is somebody's favorite.
Yeah.
When I sold comics, I didn't knock comics because we've talked about it ad nauseum in the past where, you know, what would you feel like if someone came in and go, oh, you're picking up this book? Oh, Ultraverse? Boy, that sucks. I don't know why you're wasting your time.
I used in college, I went to a shop that did that. And eventually, you know, they were the only shop for 50 miles. Eventually, I got so sick of it, I mail ordered. And this was when I was in college, so paying for comics 3 months in advance was not easy to do. But I got so tired of, why do you buy New Mutants? You should be buying Cerebus. But I like New Mutants. I like Bill Sienkiewicz. I'm giving you money. Shut up. Freaking! We will do an episode on it, but DC is shutting down all of their outside imprints. Zoom, Inc., and Vertigo. They're folding them in together. There will be three. Basically, they're going to do age brackets, which I remember in the 80s when they said they were going to do labeling, a bunch of comic creators threw up their hands, and Marv Wolfman got fired for saying he didn't like it, and on. But now they're going to do it. There's going to be a DC Kids line. The regular DC line will be for ages 13 and up, and DC Black Label. And we mentioned in the past how they're already moving a lot of the Vertigo stuff over to Black Label. I knew Vertigo was dead when Karen Berger left. Shelley Bond did a great job after that, but there was no corporate will to keep it going. Karen Berger actually said when it was announced that risk-taking and corporate ownership do not mix, and that Vertigo being shut down was a foregone conclusion. She left quite a few years ago she said she left. The company said she left, but it was one of those cases where, well, you can leave or... And now she's over at Dark Horse. She's still editing books. I've talked about those in the past. But it's kind of sad that DC is shutting down their imprints. I heard that Jim Lee said that they will still be doing creator-owned books. But I'm looking at the creator-owned books they do, and it's all miniseries that are ending.
And anything Bendis wants to do, I suppose.
Yep. Bendis's Jinx World is still going to be part of it because that's part of his contract. But I doubt they're going to be doing any other creator-owned stuff, partly because they've shut down Vertigo, which was sort of set up for that, and partly because Image will just say, hey, come over here, we'll give you a better deal. And Image's sales on creator-owned stuff are as good, if not better, than DC's sales on creator-owned stuff. But after the current run of miniseries, and the only creator-owned book will be one that hasn't been put out in a while, and that's American Vampire by Scott Snyder. So, and IDW put out some, they're a publicly held company, so they had to put out some of their information. They lost over $1.5 million so far this year, Joe.
And they're for sale.
And you know how I've always said, gee, I wonder how they can make money on these licensed books when they sell less than 10,000 copies of them. Guess they can't. It's a shame that they are losing enormous amounts of money. Hopefully their focus on comics for kids, they've got a good way to sell them. Because we need more companies like IDW.
When they got Yo Books, don't they? And
they have Yo Books. They have the artist. They have the artist edition books, which are those big books that are scanned directly from the original art.
They got Top Shelf too, or
they have Top Shelf. They have half of the Disney Kids line. Dark Horse has the other half, but you can't be losing money like that and last a long time. I think a lot of what they were created for, they were a multimedia company. So they were created to create things that they could sell to movies, such as 30 Days of Night. But boy, it's been a long time since they've had one. I am going to be at the St. Cloud Comic Con at the library. Joe, ask me why this is part of the freaking.
I'm not going to, because I have it as part of the geeking, but go ahead.
A
rare public appearance.
I've been invited to take part in this, and my arm was twisted quite a lot, so I'm going. However, the organizer has not told me what they want me to be doing. With all of the, come on, we really need you. You're going to be vital to this convention. I'm not listed on any of the panels or anything else. So I don't know what they're going to want me to do there. And the last time I was at a convention where they said, oh, you're going to be a vital part of this convention, and we really need you to do stuff, and then they never told me what to do, it was one of the worst experiences, because I just kind of sat there at a table waiting for them to tell me what to do. So I'm really nervous about this.
Don't be. I'm going to be right by your side, really ridiculing you the whole time. Besides, if we get there and we're like, oh, well, yeah, here's a table, I got two words for that. We're going to hit the con. We're going to hit St. Cloud, Granite City. We're going to hit our bookstore up there that I always forget the name, but it's right across the street. Maybe hit a few other places and head home.
Okay.
We're not going to hang. We're going to make a geeking day of it. Of course, we'll record the entire thing for your bemusement.
No!
Yes, bemused. Everything's bemused. She hates
me. We will broadcast it. If I can figure out how to do that again.
Let's just record it. We'll edit it into a, make it look good. Like we were the champions. Thank God. Oh, by the way, St. Cloud Comic Con Part 2. The return of Comic-Con will be July 13th at the St. Cloud Public Library, 1300 West St. Germain Street in St. Cloud, Minnesota. Type it in, Google it. It's on the Facebooks. It's all part of the Great River Regional Library System.
Last thing I am freaking on. Joe, last night was my final shift out at the Victoria campus for the group home I work at. The clients are all moving to these really nice houses. I actually, when I would Google some of them to find out, you know, and get directions, they would show, this house recently sold for $470,000. This house recently sold for $520,000. These are incredibly nice houses in really nice neighborhoods. The clients who move into them do better when they get there. But still, for 9 years, I have driven to that campus. I have worked those shifts. There were times when it's, okay, we need you in Cottage 2. And then, oh, okay. And then you go over to Cottage 1 and work for a few hours and back and forth. So there's a lot of memories wrapped up in that. And now I will kind of be a gypsy. They have 7 homes that I will be bouncing between until they figure out. Basically, until somebody quits that has a schedule I could take. But yesterday was my training for one of the houses I will be doing a lot of sleeping overnights in for the next 2 weeks. So I left my overnight shift, drove all the way up to Maple Grove, took about 40 minutes, and got there. And they gave a tour of the house, and they talked about the clients. And then for the next 2.5 hours, they went over the basics of how to log things in the computer, because everybody else working there has not worked yet.
And if you don't know what to do, ask Corey.
And, you know, I'm already tired from doing a sleep shift because, you know, you don't really sleep well. Last week was a long week at the full-time job, too. I am fighting so hard to stay awake because they're giving me basic stuff that I learned 9 years ago. So I hope I didn't look as bad as the guy who kept playing on his phone during the training. He won't be there long. But, oh, man, so I'm there, and I cannot get enough caffeine in me fast enough to not kind of be, I'm so tired, I just want to leave. I'm so tired, I just want to leave. I'm so tired, I just want to leave. Nothing like being trained on what you've been doing for 9 years. Joe, what are you geeking on?
I went, you know, a little behind the scenes stuff. I think it's been weeks since we actually have been talking sequentially. Corey pulled a fast Todd McFarlane type thing where we recorded podcasts and posted them in different orders. So I don't know what I've talked about and what I haven't done, or worse, what I've done that I wanted to talk about. That's like, well, that's already a couple of months old. I don't know. So you see how sneaky that rat bastard is? Ah, what a goody two shoes. Anyways, I went to something called GarageCon. This was put on by three guys, Steve Henninger, Al Hortzmanmeyer, and comic creator Lance Ward. They basically, I think there was a fourth one involved, but he wasn't there when I was there. They've done this before, I think Lance particularly, where they got three creators, they put all their stuff together, they advertise the bejesus out of it, and then they just open the garage and do a garage sale. And they said they did really well on the first day. It's kind of like a miniature Comic-Con, so to speak. And I was able to go and visit. Didn't really buy a lot. I did pick up. I did actually buy something from everyone. From Steve, I got one of those death plush dolls that came out a while back. Jill Thompson did like a little death. I think I can't remember the name of the series, but it's in that type of style. So I picked up a metallic Optimus Prime, which sold out as soon as it hit the Walmart. So I will probably post the Optimus Prime. Well, I'm not putting it on eBay, but I'm going to put it up with the Weird Al Yankovic figure and my Bill the Cat and my Snoopy doll. So, see, I don't sell everything. From Lance, I picked up a graphic novel, and I don't know if I have this, but he gave me such a good deal on it. The Customer Is Always Wrong from Drawn in Quarterly and Minnie Pond. So it's basically it looks like she's standing against a wall outside a cafe. And being retail, I'm looking forward to checking this out. And like I said, I may have a copy of this. If so, you know what I do with it. I put it on eBay's. And I picked up a graphic novel I wasn't even aware existed. A while back, I reviewed the Lexian Chronicles from, you know, Corey, I hate to say it, I'm going to have to get a frickin' magnifying glass. I can't read this small print. Marcosia, which I read the first issue because I had a variant cover, one of those leather ones. It's on the eBay's, folks. And I bought the graphic novel, and I did not. I remember reading it, saying, you know, I really wish this was continued. Well, apparently it was. And the amazing thing is, I don't, you know, I didn't see it on the comic book sources I was looking for. You know, usually my go-to choice is Atomic Avenue, but there is something also called the Comic Book Database, comicbookdb.com. And I think I might just have to start looking at that as well, you know, using two sources. So, and it was a lot of fun. You know, it's kind of neat. I suggested to the guys, if they're interested, maybe I might get my stuff together and we could do a garage con at my place, you know, move to different geographical areas around. I haven't talked to the guys since, and I don't know if I'll get to it this year, but I'll definitely bring it up when I see him at Fall Comic Con, the One Day Wonder, which is all the way in October. Although it's not that far away. This one's at the Edumacation building at the State Fair grounds. That's your lane, Corey.
Where you got to get edumacated.
Yes, yes. You see, Corey's real enthused about Comic-Cons again. 33,000 square foot of action. I won't have anything there. I will probably be working the door, so stop by, say hi. If you got something you want to donate to the charity booth and take a tax write off for the year, just give me a yell ahead of time, and I'll have the form waiting for you, and I'll more than happy to take it. No details yet, no guests, no table reviews, because the guys are all getting that stuff prepped. They're awake from their Odin sleep from SpringCon. www.mcbacomiccons.com is where you'll see all that information once it hits. A couple other reading things I'll mention. I am rereading one of my favorite runs of comics, The Mighty Thor, Walt Simonson's epic run. Boy, I wish I had some. I mean, it was a hot book when it first came out, because that first Thor 337 sold out instantly. And I don't think they did second prints. And you know, now, of course, because Beta Ray Bill's in it, it's got renewed life. And as a back issue, it's hit the stratosphere. So especially if you can keep it in great shape. For a while there, I wasn't quite sure where my volume two went. You know, the number one's a setup. And then, of course, it goes into the big crossover where the Casket of Winters is released. All the Marvel comic books that month took place during the winter, which I thought was a good crossover. Some went directly into it, like Avengers. Again, not quite the Red Sky thing, because even if the winter happened, it wasn't a, this is a Thor tie-in crossover. Nowadays, the big event book would be like what's happening now, War of the Realms. And Corey, you've been reading it since the beginning. I mean, this, and I missed on the graphic novel. I'm going to have to pick up where they're reprinting it from the beginning. But this is a hell of a ride, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's one of those things that I like because it didn't come out of nowhere. They've been building this for years. And all the threads are coming together. And I really like that when a writer does that.
And I've Brainlock. Who's the writer?
Jason Aaron.
Thank you. His first Thor graphic novel was offered a couple months ago, and I passed on it. But I will be. I was thinking this is my chance to just read the run, because I don't know how long he did Thor before. Well, obviously, till Original Sin, and then the female Thor came along, and we had that whole saga. And, you know, I picked up bits and pieces. I read The Unworthy Thor, which I don't know if he wrote or not.
Yep.
It tied into the Ultimates Thor when they got rid of the Ultimate Universe. Just brilliant. This is the type of long-term stuff that I know the old-school comic guys absolutely hate. Absolutely hate. I want it done in one. This is the type of storyline that I love. And I'm surprised I wasn't smart enough to pick up on it when it started. But I can, and I hope they continue the graphic novels. Because I know I'm hoping, you know, eventually he'll probably do an omnibus, but I want to read it and just, you know, I'll be, who knows, a couple of years from now, I'll be like, oh, that War of the Realms was so cool. Like, I can't believe I didn't pick it up when it came out. Let's see, blah, blah, blah. Well, let's talk a little bit about, a couple other books to mention. Ah, screw it. I'll mention that one next week. Oh, my God. Who hasn't read Doomsday Clock number 10? If you haven't, go pick it up. Especially you old school guys like me who are like, oh, New 52 kind of lost me. This is the book that might bring you back. I'm not going to say anything more. I'm not going to spoil it. But I think I even texted Corey when I read it, like, oh, my God. And I sat down and I was reading runs of comics. And Doomsday Clock 10 was the last one. And I think we got to wait a couple years for 11 and 12. Either way,
probably.
It's coming. So very excited. Very excited. Music-wise, you know, I've been geeking on music. My wife got us tickets to go see Hart and Joan Jett this fall, so I'm looking forward to that. But we had this thing in St. Paul called the Twin Cities Jazz Festival. It was set up a number of years ago. Excuse me a second. Don't drink carbonated beverages in podcasts, folks. It was set up with the mission of bringing the community together to enjoy and appreciate the art form of jazz and inspire new generations of youth. It was a one-day event in downtown Minneapolis 21 years ago. It's now one of the largest free civic jazz festivals in the upper Midwest. We got there early at Mears Park, which is in the Lower Town area, downtown St. Paul. Beautiful park. They've done a wonderful job, the Friends of Mears Park. All volunteer. They got plants. They actually have like artificial streams running through it. Just a fun place to just kind of hang. We got there early. We staked out our area and sat there for all 8 hours during the Jazz Fest. And it actually, this is the 21st annual one. It goes all over the metro in different areas. We stuck in the Mears Park area because they had two stages, the main stage, and then there was a stage on Fifth Street. So while different acts were changing, we went. Now, I got to admit, I'm a Luddite when it comes to music, and I know very, very little about jazz. And, you know, to me, in my brain, jazz is like a monolith. Oh, jazz is monolithic. Oh, and, you know, I'm 120% wrong. I'll be the first person to admit that. Sitting there for 8 hours, I was able to enjoy free jazz. I mean, not that I couldn't on, you know, the local station. I think it's 88.1. But it was just so much fun to just sit The weather was perfect. It got cloudy. It didn't rain. And be exposed to the different jazz. Plus, you know, they had tons of food carts. I got a free massage from the St. Paul Chiropractic Clinic, hanging with good friends. But you can go to TwinCitiesJazzFestival.com. You can see the artists that I saw, the other artists that I didn't see, because this runs like Thursday through Saturday. And just a lot of fun. I know I'll be going to it next year. I'll probably blab about it. Matter of fact, off the podcast, Corey and I were talking about this, and there's a Blues Fest coming up at the end of the month. And I mean, who knows, maybe a couple. I'm a little more intimate with blues just because so many of the early rock musicians were influenced by blues. But again, same place, same venue, get there early, sit down, plop our thing down, and just, it's free. So yeah, a lot of music geeking for me. And I didn't get too sunburned either. Final thing. Oh, the Stranger Things trailer dropped. Oh, Corey, have you watched Stranger Things?
I have not.
Oh,
I know I should, and I probably will.
Well, and you can binge it when you're ready. Yep. You will love it because it happens during the era you and I grew up in. So, you know, when you see them waiting by the phone for the phone call, or in the video arcade, or just the music and the fashions and what's going on, how big Ghostbusters was when it first came out. I mean, you're going to love it for that. And the story is damn compelling. Matter of fact, what's killing me now is I can't think of the actor who plays the sheriff. Hang on a second while I fire up the old Googletron 2000. Oh, David Harbour. He is at the Mall of America, even as we're podcasting now. Well, he'll be there in a couple hours, but you know, you got to line up by 10 a.m. if you ever have a chance to see him. And I had just seen in the Targets, they have 12-inch action figures on his character. And boy, I am just terrible with Millie Bobby Brown's character, 11. You know, and she was in Godzilla too, so you get the fun to see her there too. If I had, you know, I'm too dedicated to this podcast to tell Corey I'm blowing you off another weekend. Use the fill-in episode that we heroically recorded less than a week ago and burn it up. You know how nervous Corey gets if he doesn't have a few in the can, and stand in line for hours just to be told, "I'm sorry, David's just a meet and greet. He's not signing autographs." Oh, well, he's going to be on the, I guess, the Jason show tomorrow, which if you care, you can go look it up on the YouTubes, because by the time this drops, it'll be past. So a lot of fun. And I know, Sarah, I know, Corey, you were depressed because last weekend, Sarah Jessica Parker was at the Mall of America with her new shoe store. And I know you've been visibly upset because you did not get a chance to go and see her. Because of the incident. Anyways. Oh, one minor freaking. Why am I missing my Heroes in Crisis number 5? That was going to be what I was going to review this week. To the source. Corey, what you geeking on?
Joe, do you have a tablet?
I have several. Never use them.
There is a new app called Graph. What is it? I'm going to get the name exactly right. Graphite, Graphite. It is a new comic reading app. It is free with ads or $4.99 a month. Here are some of the books that are on it. Irredeemable, Lock and Key, Mouse Guard, Incorruptible, Dave, Edward Scissorhands, Part Unknown, Haunted Horror. Let's see here, Bob's Burgers, Lumberjanes. Silent Hill, Clue, Dungeons and Dragons, Cyanide and Happiness. They have partnered with Boom Studios, Legendary, IDW, Paper Cuts, Top Cow, Tokyo Pop, Dynamite. What the hell are you doing?
Looking for my tablet.
This is a new app. The ads do not intrude. They're basically ads at the bottom of the page, kind of like when you're on some other apps where they have the little ad at the bottom of the page. I am loving this. It's very well put together, easy to search. New, you can actually subscribe to
Found books it!
So that when a new issue is uploaded, it'll send you an alert.
Shit, it's dead. Where the hell's the power cord? Where the hell's the power cord?
So, yeah, now I got another way to read even more comics, and these are for free.
What would be fun, and I don't think it'll ever happen, but if that could, like, interface with the other services, do you think it's superior in terms of how it appears for Marvel Unlimited and the DC, or is it on par with?
It's better than DC and not as good as Marvel.
Cool.
Marvel's... The Marvel Unlimited, that is the gold standard. Basically, when a movie comes out, it's, oh, you've seen the movie? Here are some books that influenced the movie. Here's some, or when a tie-in comes, here's where you can read, you know, the start of this, or here's books that tie in with this. There are a few bugs here and there, but for the most part, Marvel is the top of the line. This one's really good because it's easy to navigate. They have good groupings. After you've read some books and clicked, it's like Netflix in that once you click some likes, it starts recommending books. DC's the worst. It's hard to navigate. There are continued stories where they don't have – first, they won't – you have to go and search for the next part of it. It's if it's a crossover, or they may not have entered that. So there are times when it's, oh, here's issue 1, 4, 7, 9, and 12 of a crossover. Ugh. I am still reading Clyde Fans by Seth. This is a book that he was serializing in Palookaville. It just came out as a completed book. First off, the book itself is beautiful. It's slipcased. He designed the slipcase and the cover. If you've seen the Peanuts books, Seth is the one who designed those. He has a wonderful style, very simplistic, minimalist style to his work and also to his art. This is just a very quiet story of a Canadian fan company as they move slowly toward irrelevance and how that affects the people involved. It's you're not going to get fight scenes. You're not going to get explosions. This is a comic where they spend a page and a half showing a guy who's depressed getting into a bathtub. But I love Seth's work. I love his art style. He captures mood so well. He captures the small things better than almost any artist. I absolutely love this book. And then Marvel is announcing some stuff that I'm excited about. We'll talk more about it when previews comes out. But Joe, you know how you finished up the Marvel Visionaries for Peter David's Hulk?
Yes.
Now they're doing omnibuses.
I may have to because I have not been able to find a cheap copy of number 5. Those later ones are outrageously priced. But now that I know omnibuses are coming, guess what I'm putting on eBay tonight?
They're going to do his whole run as omnibuses. And then the other thing they're doing, they're reprinting some of the omnibuses that go for huge money on the secondary market. The first one they're going to be reprinting is the Annihilation omnibus, which came out when I couldn't afford omnibuses. So you're really looking forward to that. And they're also announcing that they're going to reprint the 2 Bendis Daredevil omnibuses. So I like the fact that they're, I don't know if they're going back and looking and saying, hey, these are going for big money online. Let's reprint them. Or if it's, you know what, they've been out of print for this many years. Let's get them back into print because they did well. Hopefully this means they're going to reprint the Eternals.
And Marvel's Secret Wars 2.
Yep. And some of the other early omnibuses that went out of print like almost 10 years ago now. It's hard to believe the omnibus program started in 2006.
Oh, and it's so I go back to look at those podcasts and listen to me. Ah, too big, too expensive, don't like it. See, I can change my mind.
Yes. So, believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about funny books for an hour and a half. And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most, Joe.
Corey, not only donate to the IRC, but hit my music. Funk is on a roll.
We done, bitches!